A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Triple Jump podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
This is a video game podcast where we talk about video game happenings and other stuff.
And unhappenings.
And the unhappenings. So, have you got a good example of a video game unhappening, Peter?
What about Time Splitters 4?
That's a very
that was going to
good
happen,
unhappening.
And then it unhappened, didn't it?
Releasing tonight on youtube.com/Team Triple Jump, Peter Austin presents 10 video game unhappenings that might have happened if they hadn't unhappened.
Oh.
It's a very catchy title. The only keyword in there is video game, mm-hmm. but because we've chosen to stylize it with a space in between, sometimes that can be difficult for SEO, I think.
Difficult for SEO?
I think so. I think it might read it. I don't know how comprehensive it is, but it might read it as video and game.
Well, I think I'd like to think that Google is now intelligent enough to recognize the word video and game together as video game.
Well, that remains to be seen, isn't it?
You're also catching the word game. Whereas if it's video game, all one word, if people are just Googling best games, mm-hmm. worst games ever.
Yeah.
Then
worst video space game ever.
But if they put worst video game, all one word, mm-hmm. then you're not going to catch game in the title.
That's true. And also we might catch that that ever elusive crowd of current day fans and followers who are always looking for happenings.
Yeah.
Plenty of mentions of the word happening in there.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's going to be our biggest list yet.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But F in the chat for all the unhappened video games.
all the unhappenings. Thankfully, there have been no unhappenings this last week, as far as I'm aware.
We should do a new news segment. We'll do weird news, and then after that, we'll just talk about the latest unhappening.
What's unhappened?
This is really going a long way.
It's this bit, isn't it? It's just, it won't end. I suppose you could say we need to make it unhappen.
We
and
do.
I'm going to do that now. I'd like to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/team triple jump. We exclusively source our questions for the podcast from them. Mm. They're fine, morally upstanding people, and those of you who don't support us on Patreon are also people.
Yeah.
First up, it's Jessica James.
Two first names. Did Jessica James, two first names.
It rhymes.
It rhymes.
It does. Did you read the recent article on Anthem and BioWare? I found it interesting that the working environment of game developers can sometimes be similar to other jobs for large companies that are not perceived to be as exciting. Are you aware of this article, Peter? Can you explain what this be?
I mean, in answer to the first part of the question, did you read the recent article on Anthem and BioWare? I didn't actually read it all because it's super proper big long.
It's a real long boy. It's a girthy article.
The bit that I did read was very interesting. And I've also heard other stuff recently over the past couple of weeks that I imagine probably made it into that article. So, I have a good idea of what this was about.
Yeah.
Basically, just the absolute shoot show that was Anthem. That's what the article was about.
Yeah.
As much about the game itself as the development phase and like the chaos that was going on behind closed doors. Literally, you know, days before announcing it, they're changing all kinds of
the name
and in-game stuff as well, you know? Like, we'll get onto a lot of it in a minute, I'm sure. But like, for example, the thing that I thought was really interesting is that flight was like removed and then re-added within, I think, about 2 weeks before it was announced at E3.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how has that happened? That's like one of the key kind of, oh, look, you're in an Iron Man suit and you're flying around this jungle. 2 weeks prior, they weren't flying in that game.
No.
How did that happen?
No. At several points, it sounds like it very nearly unhappened.
Yeah.
Anthem, that is. So this is an article from Kotaku, our favorites, our favorite boys over at Kotaku,
Yeah.
Written by Jason Schreier, who has sort of a history of writing these really in-depth expose sort of pieces. Mm. And he's interviewed a number of anonymous sources who worked on Anthem over the long development cycle of it, trying to get all the interesting information. We'll link it, of course, in the description of the podcast, both on YouTube and the audio version, if you want to go and read it. It's very long, but it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And what Jessica's referring to, in that sometimes it seems that game development, you would imagine it to be not necessarily glamorous, but exciting and an interesting dynamic place to work. But the same sorts of issues that you have working at Waterstones will happen in a big game company where people fall out and there's no real leadership. People get sad and don't really want to be there anymore. Yeah. And it just sounds like sort of trying to remember the full thing, because obviously it's a very long article.
A lot to remember in your small head.
It's such a small head as well. Basically, they wanted, when they first set out, they wanted to create something that would be remembered forever. They wanted this really unique, because it was going to be called Beyond initially, right up until, I think it was 2 weeks before they announced it at E3 that year that they announced it, where it was just changed to Anthem for some reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had all these in-game assets, and it was like, oh, God, okay, what are we doing?
People at the office were literally saying, why is it called Anthem? I don't really understand the
doesn't
relevance
make any
of
sense
that word
at all, which of course is what we all echoed as well when we heard the name. But it sounds like what they wanted to do initially was create this incredible open world survival game where you would, and I'm just using examples from my own head right now rather than pulling directly from the article, but it sounds like a bit like Monster Hunter, in that you would have a hub where all of you would meet together and gather your gear and stuff, and you and a group of friends would basically go out on expedition-style missions into really hostile alien environments, have to achieve whatever objective you had to get, be that just survive for as long as possible and try and get as much stuff as possible, and then make your way back successfully without dying, or, you know, just go and shoot stuff.
Kill a thing.
It sounded like that, just that initial pitch sounds really good to me. Like, I would be really interested in that game. But as people started to fall away, as writers left, as creative directors left, and as EA sort of stepped in because there was, you know, it didn't appear to really be going anywhere. That it was just all over the place. As you said, they took out flying, they put flying back in, but every time they put flying back in, they had to completely redesign the world. Because if you can fly everywhere, then, you know, no one's going to stop to smell the roses. Yeah. So there's no point in intricately designing stuff. It's mad. You know, they changed the name 2 weeks before they announced it.
They were just generally terrified it was going to be another Mass Effect Andromeda, weren't they? All the chaos and all the changes and all the hype, I guess, like, you know, or certainly the intention from a developer and publisher point of view, that, like, when we finally announce this, we want people to go, oh my God, and we want them to then be waiting with bated breath to get their hands on it, and then we want them to get their hands on it and be like, this is amazing. Yeah. And that's kind of what Andromeda was supposed to be as well, I think.
Well, that's what they did with the faces, right? They wanted to want them to be un-meme worthy,
right?
Something like that.
Yeah, they were concerned that the Anthem faces could just be another meme fest.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if they have been necessarily. I think they might have achieved something there.
It looks gorgeous in a lot of ways, but as a result, because they were scrapping and redoing things over and over again, they had about four or five different lead writers across the various points of the game's development and redevelopment and unhappening and happening. That there are people have remarked who've played the games, like, this person, this fully motion captured person just referred to something that did not happen.
Right.
And in the article, it says, you know, this is literally what the case is. You know, it's so expensive for motion capture, and we were running so short on time, and EA was saying, you need to have it out by this date. And I don't necessarily want EA or you know, EA is always going to be the bad guy in any situation they're mentioned. Yeah. But I think here it's literally just a case of loads of factors coming together. But they were told, this is your deadline, and they'd already pushed it a couple of times. And motion capture was so expensive, and they wanted to get the motion capture right, as you said, so it couldn't be memed like Mass Effect Andromeda, that as the game kept changing and bits kept being scrapped, they literally were unable to redo bits of dialogue.
Yeah, so they're to be relevant to the new bits.
Exactly. Yeah. There's motion capture and performance in there that is totally irrelevant and refers to bits of the game that were just completely cut out.
But I imagine they were told, like, no, just we've done that capture now, just leave it in.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was expensive. You may as well use it. So
EA's, I think, former chief boy, Patrick Soderlund, I believe his name was. Mm-hmm. I think that's who it was mentioned in the article, came by and saw how Anthem was going a few years ago, and he was not happy.
Oh, dear.
And he said, you've got 2 weeks to build me something. And they built this basically, they built the demo they showed off at E3 in 2 weeks. And then he was like, this is exactly what I want.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh God, okay, so now we've got to build a game from this tech demo.
Yeah.
And we've nothing we've done so far is really usable. And essentially they built the entire game in sort of the last 16 months.
It's insane.
Of the game's development. Mental.
I think I saw an article recently that's, because, you know, They may well have got away with things like the faces. You know, they didn't turn out all rubbery and memey.
Yeah.
So visually, meme-y. Like memey. Meme-y.
I did not share that memey.
Yeah. So visually, it's mostly a fairly competent game. But I think I saw an article recently, citation needed. I'm 99% sure it was Anthem, but it may have been another game that said one of the starter weapons was one of the best in the entire game due to the way that the game like scales kind right. of items and stuff. So if you're like a new player with one of the first weapons, and you go out with like a high level guy, because of how the game scales, like the damage that you do, so that you can play with anyone of any level, it makes that starter weapon super powerful.
Really?
And people were like, oh, this is just, I can use this.
Oh dear.
So that's all sad, certainly with regards to the game development. But also, yeah, like as it says in the question, that, you know, it turns out game development is like just working for other large companies where people get sad and stuff, and that can have like some big knock-on effects. It reminds me of when Ken Levine left Irrational after Bioshock Infinite, and he is like quoted as saying, he says I saw a photo of myself before we started developing Infinite, and I just looked so much happier.
Oh God!
And he says, like, oh, you know, just the process of like slogging through, trying to, because that was another game that changed that just so had, much.
There are so many comparison videos of pre-release footage to the final thing.
So it just reminds me of that like people do get sad, and it can have serious effects. It's not all fun and games when you're a game developer.
Absolutely not. These guys were subjected, as so many are. You know, there were lots of reports about Red Dead Redemption 2 and people at Rockstar.
Just doing crazy hours.
Exactly, yeah. With this, in the article, it was talking about how people would, basically, they would be signed off work with stress.
Like, right.
So many of them would be signed off work with stress, and then that would leave holes in teams, because these people might just not come back.
Yeah.
A lot of them just went off with stress and never came back, because it's just too much.
There's like extra work for the people left.
Extra work. They can't bring in, they can't tempt sort of senior, I'm trying to think of the word now. People with a great deal of industry experience in relevant fields. They can't tempt them to come to work for BioWare because they know about what's going on with this game. They're like, I'm not too sure. And also, they're in this city that gets really, really cold in Canada. And so people don't want to, especially
live there.
Yeah, people who have worked in the industry for a long time don't feel like it's worth them uprooting to come all the way up there to work for them.
Right.
And then they had to develop it all on this new engine as well. Mm-hmm. This is something this article goes into in great depth, is the Frostbite engine, which is now what FIFA is on. It was developed by DICE. For Battlefront and Battlefield and all
which
that kind of stuff.
Which looks great.
It's a beautiful engine, but by all accounts, it is so broken and hacked together that nobody really knows how to use it. And there's a central support team in EA that the various studios can call for advice, but frequently, because they were working on an RPG essentially, they were lower down the totem pole compared to studios working on the likes of FIFA and things that were guaranteed to make a great deal of money. Mm-hmm. So they kept not getting the help they needed, and it just added to all of the issues that they had. They were using this engine that they just couldn't... Basically, the engine, if they were allowed to use what they had done previously on previous titles, they'd be able to import things like... It sounds ridiculous, but things like inventory systems and stuff just don't exist in the Frostbite engine.
Right.
They have to create them from scratch.
Right.
for this game. Like, they have to build everything they use from scratch in this engine, and it's mad.
That's a shame.
Totally mad.
Because I really like Frostbite. That's one of the, I think, one of the saving graces of the Battlefront games.
Yeah,
is that I think they look absolutely stunning.
They do,
and it's locations that you recognize. So it's sad to hear that Frostbite is just an absolute nightmare to work with.
I suppose once you've got one game done in it,
yeah,
it's not so bad to make the sequel.
Well, yeah, definitely.
With a game like this that had such a horrible development cycle, it's understandable that this probably didn't help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was Frostbite.
That's certainly the one that EA used for. That's the DICE one. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Right. It's just giving me loads of pictures of feet and hands
with bits falling Frostbite. Off. Great.
So that is not something to Google without Game Engine on the end of it.
Okay.
Cautionary tale. Thank you, Jessica, for that question.
Thank you, Jessica James.
And do go read that article if you are interested, because it is it's a long read, but it's fascinating.
Mm.
It really is interesting if you want to know how big AAA game development works sometimes. It never goes smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
I said in one of my lists, God of War, the new one, the new God of War from last year.
Critically acclaimed.
But at one point, Shuhei Yoshida, the head of Worldwide Studios, I believe, came to see it and he walked out without saying a word.
Oh, yeah, that's
hated
right.
It.
He
hated
sat down and played it and just got up and walked out.
Yeah.
Not a word. Imagine that.
It's such a process to get that, to get a vision like that together. But fortunately, that game had Corey Barlog at the helm, and he was able to guide it to for want of a better term, to completion.
Yes.
And it was phenomenal. And we all enjoyed it, much ecstasy and the like. But this had no creative driving force behind it, with people leaving all over the place. There was no one to shepherd it in to
the finish.
Yeah. To get what people wanted out of it. But there we go.
Well, what a shame.
Yeah. Peter.
Yes.
What's happening? Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you used the word happening there,
is it?
With an apostrophe on the end.
Happening.
What's happening?
Because
the next segment is What We Playin'.
Ah!
With an apostrophe.
Yeah. Welcome to What We Playin'. Now, I know this may seem like an alien concept to some of you, so allow me to speak without condescension. This is a section that is so groundbreaking, so unbelievable, that you may not understand it.
Yeah.
It's where we talk about the games that we've played in the last week. Peter, what games have you played in the last week?
Goodness me. In the last week, yesterday at time of recording, I finished my Beyond Good and Evil
fantastic
stream. So that was fun. I've already talked about that before, but I did just want to say check that out.
The last VOD should be up now at the time of the release of this episode.
Yeah, because it goes up on Wednesday, I think.
So you can watch the whole playthrough on our channel.
It was a lot of fun. And then at the end, we watched the two trailers for the next game altogether. Now that people have a better understanding of the world and the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that,
yeah,
on our joint stream, I sat and played through most of Little Nightmares.
Yes.
Which is a game that I really, really love very much.
I've been thinking a lot about that game since. I want to see the ending.
Oh, yeah. You want to find out what?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very mysterious game.
You want to see it, do you?
Yeah. Well, all right, then. Well, maybe we will.
Fine.
Maybe we'll, next time we do a joint stream or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we can squeeze both of them.
Both of them, yeah.
A way out, the finishing of a way out.
That might be perfect, actually. Yeah. Because we've got little ending bits of both to do.
Yeah.
So I really love that game. I love the visual style. If you watch the stream, this is stuff we have already talked about. But you know, the world is built to kind of accentuate the idea that you're a small child in a big purple's world, a big person's world.
Yeah.
So you play as a character called Six, who's a 6-year-old girl,
mm-hmm.
and so all the furniture around you is like giant towering kind of chests of drawers and huge bookshelves and things, which I have quite a vivid memory of being in my grandma's house when I was very young.
Yeah.
And on top of the fridge, which was like a full-size, like one of those tall fridges, had a tin on top that normally had sweets in it.
Oh, no.
I don't even know if it did at the time. I don't think it did. It wouldn't have been on top of the fridge. It would have been on the side with sweets in. But
yeah,
I saw this tin. I was like, that's the sweet tin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so far out of my reach. I was like, okay, what I can do is I can get a chair.
Mm-hmm.
I pushed it up to the fridge, stood in the chair, and it was still just at the edge of my fingertips, and I could just see it at the top of the fridge. And I pulled it out. What I didn't realize was there was a very precious dish on top.
Oh, no.
Which fell onto the hard tiled floor and smashed into a trillion pieces.
A trillion of them.
A trillion pieces, and there were no sweets inside.
Oh, there was only regret.
Yeah, that's the real
it
little nightmare.
It was full of regretty.
It just, yeah, exactly. Some lovely regretty bolognese.
Regretty spoiled your vase.
Yeah. So it takes me back to moments like that. And it's very Burton-esque. It reminds me of Tim Burton.
Definitely is.
A lot. And a little bit actually genuinely Spookums, isn't it?
Yeah, someone was watching it and just said, right, too spooky for me.
Yeah.
Like, unironically.
Yeah.
See ya.
I'm going to have to go.
Stop watching.
Sorry, can't watch this anymore.
It's genuinely unsettling, but I like to think with our insightful commentary over the top, we can all have a nice time and enjoy it. And the VOD for that is now up online if you want to see us play through most of it, right? Because it's not the longest game in the world.
Two of three acts, basically. Yeah. So we're on to act three now.
So we'll finish it off, hopefully, the next time
we stream one of the spookiest
together. Coming. Although the combined stream from this week that the podcast is releasing is actually a Borderlands stream.
Exciting.
With Patrick Fenn, the lead producer of the remaster, which is available now on personal computer, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Yeah.
And that's very exciting because I'm a huge Borderlands fan, as we've discussed before, and I've been playing a lot of Borderlands.
The VOD for the joint streams goes out on a Monday, right? So
it does, but time of release. We did it on...
Oh, because it's a... Yeah,
we did
right.
it on my it. Usual day, yeah. So it should be already out. Mm. If you want to watch us ask some questions about... Maybe ask some... Try and get some sneaky Borderlands 3 info out of it.
Yeah.
Maybe find out some stuff about the... Again, talking about the interesting challenges that are faced during game development, find out what it's like to add four-player co-op to a game that previously only supported two, or the fact they've added golden chests in from Borderlands 2. They're now retroactively in Borderlands 1. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. I want to know how that all works. It's fascinating.
How do you up-res literally every single asset in a cel-shaded video game?
Actually kind of unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like, I crouched down because I was playing with a friend, and I crouched down and was just sort of looking at a number pad that was just on, like, a keypad that was on the side of a door.
Mm.
And I looked at it. I was like, oh, my God. Not only can I read the numbers, but underneath it says A, B, C, D, E, F.
Oh,
you know,
right,
like
an
actual, like, it was all there. And there was a little dial to the right of it that had numbers on it and stuff. I was like, bloody hell.
This is a 10-year-old game,
right? It's actually all here. Yeah, it is. I think 2009 maybe is when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it holds up fantastically. You know, I Borderlands 2 is one of my favorite games ever, but I loved Borderlands 1. Mm-hmm. It was really good, and it's so nice playing it again now. I love that I can import my old character.
Yeah, that's good.
With all of her ridiculously overpowered stuff. And I especially love sometimes when there is cross-save functionality, when maybe it goes a little bit wonky and 50 trophies all pop at once for some reason. Like, I love that. That's great. I live
brilliant.
For that. But yeah, I'm really, really enjoying that. And you can see both of us playing through the first couple of hours of it now on the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
If you'd like to check that out. I would ask you, Peter, how you found it, but we're doing it this afternoon at the time of recording.
That would be time travel.
So yeah, that would be actual time travel. But I think you're gonna give Borderlands a go, right?
I am.
You're
gonna
try.
They've very, very generously given us both a code.
Mm-hmm.
No sponsorship going on there. Don't worry.
No.
We're not forced to say nice things about it. They just said,
no,
"Do you want one?" I said, "Yes, please."
Oh, we should probably do a quip scope about it. Should we?
Oh, we should do a quip scope.
We should
scope.
Do that.
That's
maybe
a good idea.
Maybe we'll do that. God, maybe we'll do that literally after this.
I mean, yeah.
When are we going to find the time, right?
I mean, we need... Yeah, I don't know. Because I'm away for a few days, but...
You are.
Anyway.
You are. We'll work it out. Look out for a more in-depth video very soon.
Ben?
Yes,
Peter. What you play in?
Borderlands.
Oh, okay.
And that's all. Thank you for joining us for that section. Mm. It's now time to move on to another question, Peter.
Yes. This is from Katie Whiteleg.
Also a patron.
Thank you, Katie, for patronizing us. What is your guys' opinion on the Epic Store buying exclusivity and your opinion on gamers needing to use multiple launchers for PC games? Sorry to be cheeky and slip in two questions.
Naughty.
Yeah. I find it a bit weird when there's like exclusivity on launchers. You know, it just adds an extra unnecessary step. I don't think it's like a massive deal. But you don't want, like, what's the EA one called? I should know, because my girlfriend plays Sims on my home PC, and she has to like launch it through the stupid EA one.
I think it's called EA Wallet Taker.
Yeah, EA, give us all your money and we'll give you a bad game.
EA, welcome to Unhappen Town. Welcome to the Star Wars Unhappen Town.
I'll Google it, the EA game launcher. But yeah, like, it's just, why not? I can see why there's exclusivity in a sense, because then you're able to sort of direct people to all your other games on the launcher, which is, they do a lot of that, you know. Mm-hmm. They say, oh, you're here to play Sims, are you? Have you considered playing Star Wars?
Well...
She gets a lot of Battlefront ads, sort of, you know, banners on the sides when she's trying to launch something. And, you know, that I can see why they would do that, but it's just, Steam is great, you know?
Yeah.
I love having Steam, and everything is just on there. And when I realized, oh, wait, I can't, I can't play Beyond Good and Evil, I can't emulate Beyond Good and Evil for the streams. Mm-hmm. I'll just play it on Steam. That was great, because I could just boot it up and install it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though...
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, this is a long answer. I've not given you a word edgewise.
No, it's fine. I have no insight.
To take that game as an example, the Steam version of Beyond Good and Evil doesn't have controller support, so I had to use Xpadder, which basically takes controller inputs into the computer and turns them into mouse and keyboard inputs. Like
a third-party app to just sort of translates them,
which makes it work for the most part, but sometimes, you know, trying to map a thumbstick to a mouse doesn't work the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas apparently the Uplay version of Beyond Good and Evil does have controller support.
Uplay being Ubisoft's proprietary launch.
Yeah. Origin is the EA one.
Oh, that's the boy.
Thank you, me.
Or girl.
Or girl.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's even weirder. Like, why not just, if there's a PC build of the game, why is it not just the same across all the launchers and all the providers? You know, that's just a strange thing. But,
yeah.
What do you think?
I think there are certainly parallels that can be drawn to streaming services for TV shows. Mm-hmm. So, I think most people will have Netflix, and a lot of people will have Amazon Prime just for the actual physical benefits of Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
I don't really rate their streaming service, only because I think, as someone who's had Netflix for a very long time, it's such an absolute travesty that they will mix quite happily. They will boast about how much stuff they have, but they will gladly mix together free things and things that you have to pay actual money for on top of your subscription,
especially
when they take licenses from Netflix, like they buy it out from under them, and then they start charging for it on top of your subscription. I don't like that at all. So I'm not a huge fan of Amazon Prime in that regard, but I can appreciate that lots of people have Netflix and Amazon Prime. But now you've got Disney setting up their own streaming service, and they've pulled and cancelled all of their series that are currently with Netflix.
Yeah.
Daredevil, Jessica Jones, all that, Luke Cage,
Clone
all that
Wars
kind of stuff.
Has gone. That was available in America only, but that's gone now from America.
Right. And they're probably going to launch their own proprietary service. But at least in the realm of TV land, I think that's only going to drive piracy, because the more you splinter off where you can get stuff, it's exactly the same with sports as well. If you're a fan of two or more sports, you need to have about three or four different subscription packages to various sports networks just to see it all legitimately. People will steal that stuff.
Mm.
With games on PC, obviously piracy is a huge issue. I am primarily, and I'm exclusively a console gamer boy, and I always have been, because I've always had crap PCs my entire life growing up, and I could never play any games on them. And they were always just... they always just seemed too temperamental to me. And I know that there are ways to get around that kind of stuff. But this specifically is just sort of proof that things can be better. And I don't understand why they're doing this. Epic Games in particular obviously have all of the money in the world from Fortnite. And so they can afford to do things like get Metro Exodus, which came out earlier this year, and make it exclusive to their store.
Yeah.
They can afford to do that. People aren't happy about it, but if they really want to play the game, chances are they're going to go and do it anyway. Well, they just don't like having to boot up loads of different launches to play their games.
I mean, to take the TV example, it's April now. There's going to be a massive, massive, massive spike in the people in the UK who have Now TV while Game of Thrones is out.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be an enormous drop-off, and Now TV will desperately try and claw onto those people saying, yeah, we know Game of Thrones is officially finishing forever, but...
but have you watched King Arthur from the BBC?
Yeah, it's really good. You'll enjoy it. and it's that kind of thing. It's the idea of, I've got to get the Epic launcher now just so I can play... Metro or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just don't want to have to clutter up, a new launcher for a new game. Just let me have the game.
Yeah.
It's just an extra step. It's an annoying extra step. It's kind of a first world problem, as they say. But at the same time, just put it all. That's the one case where I'm in favor of massive monopolies, I think. Just let Steam own everything.
Yeah. Another example, a prime example for me, Fallout 76, that we covered quite extensively in our Bethesda Kicked My Dog, the Fallout 76 story. You should go and watch that. It's got like 17,000 views. Oh. No big deal. They made the beta, at least, and I think the full game exclusive to their own Bethesda launcher. Mm. And that made things way worse when it all went inevitably wrong, especially with the beta, when it wouldn't allow people to uninstall the game. Unhappen the game.
It
wouldn't let people unhappen the beta without them first purchasing the full game or pre-ordering the full game, which in and of itself is a huge issue.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, for God's sake, you know that this wouldn't have happened on Steam.
Yeah.
You know it wouldn't have done.
Because it's all done for you. There's inbuilt stuff there for uninstalling, unhappening stuff. And, you know, you don't have to worry about that aspect of it.
But. And Steam's not perfect.
No, of course not.
Like, new creators and things, their stuff gets shuffled in an avalanche of so-called asset flips, where people just buy the Unity engine or the Unreal engine, and they just buy pre-made assets and then just spit them out as a game just to try and make a quick buck. And it just doesn't end. There is every day games that just use blood.png with a watermark on the corner and stuff like it, and people who make genuinely good games, it all gets lost in there.
And it's not just the case of like, oh, it's just a bad game where they, you know, it's asset flipped. It's like Steam allow people to do, hey, this is the new rape simulator game. Anyone want to play this? This is real fun.
Yeah.
Hey, who wants to play this like really racist game because it's
while
funny?
Dressed as a Nazi.
Yeah, exactly. That's great.
And it all just slips through.
It's not. It's almost their mentality that like people should be allowed to kind of make what they want. That's kind of they.
We've got so much money. We don't care.
Yeah. They occasionally then like take these things down and go, yeah, actually that's a bit too offensive. Yeah. But they put stuff on there that's like really not very good. Mm-hmm. There's a game coming out that's, I got advertised on YouTube the other day, called The Suicide Game, where
Christ.
A man tries to kill himself in as many different ways as possible.
But
Steam, you know, we feel like we should let anyone make anything, because that's how the world should be.
So nothing's perfect. There's no real perfect option here, but purposefully splintering players into several different launches, it's just an arms race, because all it takes is one person to do it and everyone be like, well, if they're doing it, I'm going to do it. Mm. Like, why would I not do it? I can exclusively advertise my games. I can exclusively advertise Star Wars games to someone playing The Sims.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't do that on Steam unless I pay a lot of money, and I can do it for free on mine.
Yeah. And you could even get other advertisers. You could say, like, does anyone want to run ads on Origin? Because, you know, if you want to, like, start selling gaming mouses or whatever, we'll happily stick a banner ad on there. I don't know if anyone is doing it at the moment, but that will happen, surely.
Absolutely. It's going to get worse before it gets better, and it only ends in one of two ways as far as I can see. It gets so bad that something awful happens and people are just like, nope. Or piracy sees a huge spike and then they change their minds that way. So who's to say? Thank you, Katie, for that question.
Thank you, Katie. Good question.
We got time now, Peter. I hope you're... Oh, what are you wearing on your feet? He's wearing his weird shoes.
I am.
Does that mean what I think it means?
Ben, do you know what day it is today?
What day is it?
It's weird Tuesday.
It's weird.
At time of recording.
Tuesday at time of recording. It's weird. It's nearly Weirdens Day.
Weirdens Day. It's weird news.
It's weird.
Weird time for weird news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Peter?
Yes?
I've got a weird news for you.
Have you? Yeah. Tell me about the weird thing that's happened in the video game sphere.
Have you heard of a video game called Fortnite?
I think so, yes.
Not the spelling that you would expect. Don't know why that is.
No, Fortnite.
Night. Variety reports on this story. Prince Harry, the Duke of Sussex, is calling for the ban of popular battle royale game Fortnite,
yes,
according to the Daily Express.
Right.
Which is a bad newspaper.
Well, I saw this also talked about on the Beeb, anti-Beeb, so...
Unfortunately, Daily Express reported it first. I went through several different websites.
Oh, I'm not suggesting.
Honestly, I did my due diligence here. Mm. I looked around and I wanted desperately for someone else to have first reported it. But all the articles say according to the Daily Express. So here we are talking about the Daily Express.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with Diana, though, this game, so bear that in mind.
Well, her son is talking about it there.
Oh, my God, it's so much to do with Diana. The prominent member of the British royal family visited a YMCA in West London and spoke to mental health experts about addictive games and social media, saying that the latter is more addictive than drugs or alcohol. This is social media he's talking to, not video games, thankfully.
Well, yeah.
Prince Harry specifically called out Epic Games' Fortnite, saying the game shouldn't be allowed. It's created to addict, he said. An addiction to keep you in front of a computer for as long as possible. It's so irresponsible.
Now, I'm not being funny. Isn't the target audience of Fortnite, you know... Well, maybe it's not... So maybe they're going for young adults as well. But, like, certainly, when you think of Fortnite and the standard Fortnite player, I think of a child.
Yes,
right?
I do.
I don't think there's a lot of children at the YMCA in Hampstead or whatever it
was.
Yeah,
West London.
West London, you know? That's, I mean, a YMCA is for people who are, I guess you'd call them either maybe teens or young adults,
yeah,
or over, you know, people who have a
As long
hard
as he
time.
Went in there and said, hey guys.
He's doing this.
He can't get his, what's that? What was that?
The hype one where you
do. Oh, the hype dance. Yeah, sorry. He can't get his words out because he's too busy he's just dabbing on these kids, man. He's just like, hey, fellow kids, how you doing? Let's talk about Fortnite. Have you heard of, Wind in the Willows? But dab, Wind in the, there's a guy called Toad in it.
Meanwhile,
it's
he's surrounded
awesome.
By like a bunch of 45-year-old, you know, homeless men
yes,
and
just,
women who are
just going.
So they say,
"Well said." Lots
I don't
of concerned parents, no children. Although, honestly, if he was, if Wind in the Willows was as popular as Fortnite, there'd be people campaigning against dangerous driving because Toad keeps crashing his car.
He's a madman.
So let's be real about this, okay? Prince Harry urges parents to take action and have their children interact more with the outside world, while also acknowledging that many parents don't know how to solve the dilemma. Parents have got their hands up. They don't know what to do about it, he said. It's like waiting for the damage to be done. So essentially, Prince Harry kind of wants Fortnite to go night-night, but...
Very good.
To him, I would say, you were born in the 90s, man. I thought you would get it.
I thought you were cool.
I thought you were cool, Harry.
I know what...
I thought you were the cool one.
Yeah, I know, me too. The cool ginger one.
The cool ginger one. The one who wore a Nazi uniform to a birthday party. I thought you were the cool one, Harry.
Did he... Was that towards the end, parents, you know, they don't know what to do about it?
Yeah.
Why not just say...
That's enough.
No.
I literally can pull from actual experience here because my parents have gone through this exact same thing with my younger brother,
mm-hmm,
who is of sixth form age currently.
Right.
But has stopped now, but has been playing Fortnite for a couple of years.
Okay.
And he would not do his homework. He would not revise for exams because he was playing Fortnite. Well, newsflash, in 2006 and 2007, I wasn't revising for stuff.
No, I was playing Oblivion.
I was playing on my PlayStation 3, and I had to have that thing taken away from me so I would stop. There are solutions to this. And I know I didn't have a smartphone then, and I could just carry on playing Fortnite on my phone, but... You know,
the solutions to that as well. Like, I've
turn off Wi-Fi. I don't know. There's stuff you can do.
I've seen photos online where people have like taken a picture of the piece of paper that their mum leaves on the kitchen table for when they get in from school before she's back from
do
work.
The dishwasher.
And it says, yeah,
take the dog for a walk.
Do these three things, and then I'll send you the today's Wi-Fi password. So they just change the Wi-Fi.
That's clever. Most routers have those settings now as well. They're very easy to set up.
So there's so many, because I know kids then have data on their phone. But then you just, there's the parental control.
Presumably, like, you're in charge of how much data they have.
Exactly. Right? You're in charge of like how much data is on the contract to begin with. And then you're also probably able to say, if they run out of data, they can't just keep like using data. Mm-hmm. Like, don't allow them to buy more data for like £6.50 for 250 megabytes.
Yeah.
Which is how much it cost me, which is very expensive.
It's so expensive. When my Wi-Fi was down, I spent so much. When my Wi-Fi, that's a Borat joke in 2019.
Very good.
I spent a lot of money on data just, you know, because I had to keep watching porn, you know.
Keep on that Fortnite.
So difficult not to have porn.
Prince Harry was knocking on the door saying, "Stop watching porn.
Hey, have you considered going outside?
Go come to the YMCA."
Not if I don't want to get arrested, Harry.
Yeah.
You scoundrel.
Yeah, there's people dressed as Nazis out there.
One looking at me right now through the peephole.
Little tiny peephole.
The tiny peephole. Peter, what have you got for me?
I've got a really weird thing. What done happened? It's not that weird, actually.
Okay.
But, you know the game The Last of Us 2?
Oh, yes.
That people are very much looking forward to, with a number 2 on it. Looking forward to.
And then you have to dab as well. Contractually, you have to dab.
So that's done by a company called Naughty Dog. Naughty Dog.
I think it's Germanic, isn't it? Naughty?
Naughty Dog.
Yeah.
And it's been a long old time since we've heard anything from them or seen anything from them. Mm-hmm. In fact, the last thing we heard or saw was that... it was E3, wasn't it? Or it was the PS4 press conference.
Yeah.
Where they did that trailer where Ellie was with that girl at that dance.
Yeah, and they did a little kiss.
A little smooch.
And all the homophobes got really upset because she's in love with a woman and that's beautiful.
No, they weren't upset because it's beautiful. They were upset because it's a sin and it's disgusting.
Oh, sorry, my mistake. I forgot. Jesus doesn't like it.
Jesus is unhappy.
It threatens them.
It does.
It physically threatens them that women would find each other attractive. And men as well.
Well, exactly. Because if women find each other attractive, then they're not going to find little horrible white soy boys attractive anymore.
Yeah, the tiny little worm, the angry worm men.
The little, it's like
the
a small
army of angry worm men.
Jabba the Hutt, but like a tiny one.
Yeah.
It's fat but small. That's what they are.
It's like a little grub worm.
Yeah.
You sort of fish with it.
Jabba the Grub, yeah.
Yeah, Jabba the Grub.
It looks like everyone's put their bogeys in a condom is what it is.
Dara.
Dara. Anyway, The Last of Us Part 2.
Being gay is wonderful.
This is
what we're trying to say.
Yeah, we've not made that clear. Anyone who's against people being gay...
go away.
Go back to Star Wars.
Yeah.
GameSpot, or G-Spot for short...
Can we please call it G-Spot?
Yeah.
From now on?
Never noticed that until I just read it.
www.gspot.com.
They report that it's been quite a while since Sony has shared any details on The Last of Us Part 2. Yeah. With Sony not coming to E3 this year, some fans are wondering when they may hear more about the long-awaited PS4 game. Mm. It's still unknown when more details or more footage may be released. However, this week, Naughty Dog community manager Arne Meyer has said on Twitter... that he appreciates enthusiasm from fans. And all they'll say for now is that they will share more details when the studio is ready, but that's at least the latest that we've heard from them. So we've had radio silence, and then we've had, we'll tell you more when we're ready, which, there's not a specific date on that.
Okay.
But the weird part...
Yeah, I'm waiting for the weird turn. What's going to happen?
...is the way in which this came out.
Okay.
So Arne Meyer was responding on Twitter to... an Onion article from the satirical website The Onion, who had posted something saying that The Last of Us was launching in 2019.
Okay.
And the point was that they were getting sort of the man on the street's opinion on the fact that there's now a 2019 launch date.
Okay.
So there's three quotes. I'll read those
so
to you.
So these are from the Onion article.
Yeah, these are
from
the
real fake news article.
It's not confirmed that it's out in 2019. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, the best I could do for weird news without... I knew you were doing the Prince Harry one, so...
Right.
If this means more of the emotionally complex storytelling of whichever zombie survival series this was again, count me in, says Harry Wall.
Okay.
Good quote there from The Onion.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not interested in video games that don't feature Koopalings, says Sherry Tate, who's a lint remover.
Oh, a lint remover. Okay.
And Patrick Bowler, who's a sleep expert, says, but I want it now. Work your employees harder.
That sounds about right.
Classic Onion parody satire there.
Oh boy.
Loving it.
And they actually responded to that article.
That's all it is. It's just, it says The Last of Us 2 to be released in 2019. Blah, blah, blah. What do you think? And then those three things. There's three quotes.
Wow.
And for some reason, that was enough to get an official response without an actual date on it, admittedly, or any new details. But yeah. Certainly Mr. Mayer was like, oh, yeah, don't worry. We'll say something soon when we're ready. Mm. And that's the first we've heard since we saw the previous trailer from an official source. So it's just
that's
weird.
Amazing. So The Onion baited them into actually giving us some sort of
Can The Onion
detail?
Do that more often? Just put a fake release date on something and say, what do you think?
Big, then... stupid man baby Trump to step down at the end of the year. I will not step down. That's not how he talks.
No, that was a bit sort of The Room, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I did not.
I will not step down.
Question three. Whatever.
Yeah,
here
sorry.
It comes.
Come on then. This is from Matthew Knights.
Yeah.
Matthew Knights, who I believe we've referred to in previous podcasts as Matthew Knight, singular.
Oh.
Clearly he's expanded his IKEA table. More, is maybe now a larger, rounder table.
Maybe two of them submitted this question.
Matthew Knights. Anyway, he says, what's a really popular game that you've personally never liked? I'm hesitant to say, right, I think the clarification needed here is that I don't think these games are bad.
Yeah.
I just didn't like them.
Okay.
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't play it. I played it for about 4 hours. It was just so much.
Yeah.
There's too much going on. It was a cowboy simulator. I wanted a cowboy game. It was too in-depth. I couldn't, at that point in my gaming life, at that specific moment in my real life, I couldn't do it.
You have to remember to have a bath and like change your clothes.
So much. There's so much to it. And it introduces it with these tiny, tiny little text prompts that you can miss and then they're gone forever. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what to do. Why can't I run when I'm in my camp? It's so slow. I want to go talk to that person, but they've not got anything to say. And now I've got to spend 5 minutes slowly trudging back across the camp again. And everyone can see when I'm doing crimes. I want to do crimes.
It was a bit of a marathon rather than an exciting sprint, wasn't it? It was just a long... They should have done fewer 33-hour days, I think. If they'd actually put less time into it.
Yeah, less crunch, guys.
It would have been...
Fewer features.
More fun. You know, I'm kind of with you there. And even to an extent, Red Dead 1, or what, it wasn't 1, was it? Red Dead Redemption.
Red Dead Redemption. I also sort of timed out on that. I think it's a problem I have with Rockstar games in general.
Yeah,
I've heard so many incredible things about Red Dead 1 and also Red Dead 2 that it's the story's unbelievable at various moments. And I don't want to watch a playthrough, but I still, you know, I can appreciate that it's an incredible game, but it just did not click with me. I think it's just the Rockstar style of game development. GTA 4, I think, is a fantastic game, and I played so much of it, especially the online with friends, but I could not finish the single player.
It's
I never
finished it.
Just all
those grays and greens, you know?
Maybe.
It's too real.
But same with GTA 5. Like, it was a real slog for me to finish that game.
Yeah.
Because it just reaches a point where I'm like, oh, okay, right, get a taxi to the next mission, skip the traveling there. It's just, there's so much, they make such brilliant, vibrant, living, breathing open worlds that making you run across the extent of it every time you want to progress the story is too much for me sometimes.
It's almost less of an escapism to it because they make it too realistic.
So realistic, like,
I don't
want to
have
to
clean my horse, please. Don't let me do it. I don't know if that's an option to clean your horse. I imagine it probably is.
I've read a lot about it online. I think there's something to do with polishing the horse's balls.
Right, okay, sure.
You've got to make sure they're shiny.
Why do I believe that?
Because they shrink and they grow
when
it's cold and warm. So you've got to make sure they look as good as possible. What about you? Is there a specific example for you, the game that you thought, everyone Everyone likes this game. Why can't I enjoy it? Is there something wrong with me? Why am I playing Fallout 76?
Yeah, well, kind of. I mean, this is kind of... I think it is actually a bit of a you love it or you hate it game. It's not sort of massively popular. Yeah. But beyond Assassin's Creed 1, there are very few... There's only one other game in the series that I've really enjoyed, and that was only for the era that it was set in. Right. So I didn't like Assassin's Creed 2.
Did you not? I loved Assassin's Creed 2.
I didn't really like... Yeah, like, even Assassin's Creed 1, like, I think the reason I liked that at the time is because that was quite groundbreaking in terms of the free-running and the stealth and the actual assassinations and stuff. That seemed a lot like a lot of fun, and there was a lot of fun collectings to do.
Yeah.
Happenings. But... It felt like more of the same in 2 and has continued to do so for me that, like, I've just never really wanted to stick with any of them. The only other one that I played was Assassin's Creed Syndicate because I quite like my sort of gothic...
All right, love, how's it going?
I like my gothic Victorian stuff.
I know you just want to play as the lady one because she's way more interesting, but it's me. It's Jack the Lad. I've got a stick.
I think I just said Victorian, but...
Victorian.
Ad Victorian, yeah. So there was that. I guess the only other thing, I know this is a game that is very much a favourite of everyone's, is I missed Final Fantasy VII at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I think that without the nostalgia, maybe not, but I think without the nostalgia, it's not really a pleasant experience to pick up when you're like, you know.
That's fair. I played it through again with the nostalgia, admittedly, because it is my favourite ever game.
I know.
The game that made me like games, like, properly, rather than, oh, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. I can't play it, but you can play a Spider-Man with a cheat code, and it's got the music that goes... And it's fun. I like it, but I can't play it. Final Fantasy VII... changed my life, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah,
there. I had the
paddle
same
hands and the.
Hey, there's stuff that they will not be able to do in this remake that was only possible because of the paddle hands.
Yeah.
So just you wait and see.
Okay.
Wait and see, buddy. I had a similar thing with MGS1.
Yeah.
Where I missed it initially and tried several times to get into it. I remember going to see my cousin. Not the one I've mentioned on the podcast before who threw a rock at me and who used to live quite nearby, but cousins that lived further away. And they had a PlayStation 2 and they had SmackDown Here Comes the Pain, which was incredible to me because these were my cousins that watched wrestling and wrestling was an alien but fascinating thing to me at that point. And they also had MGS2 and I used to love watching them play MGS2 because it was like a film.
Yeah,
and it's just like, this is, I don't know what to do. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I never played those games. And I forced myself, I tried a couple of times actually on PS3.
Oh yeah.
When they released it as a PS1 classic download. I tried it a couple of times on PSP, although obviously it presents some slight issues when you're told to call Meryl with the code that's on the back of the box.
Right.
When there's no physical box if it's a digital version.
Yeah.
So I ran into some issues. There's also some issues where, in the Psycho Mantis fight, where you have to change your controller input.
Yeah, how does that work?
And you have to press the little PlayStation button on the PSP and go to controller settings.
Like 1B or whatever.
Yeah, just fiddle around with settings and it's a bit clunky and doesn't really work.
Mm.
So I sort of gave up then. But then one summer, I really forced... It was actually after playing Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes, I think.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, this is really good. Mm. And I like this. I want to be excited for MGS5.
Yeah.
I want to play that when that comes out. I want to ride this wave of hype with everyone else. And I forced myself to play through 1, 2, and 3.
Wow. Okay.
On the HD collection for 2 and 3. And 1, I think I just played the PlayStation Classic again.
Mm.
But I'm so glad I did. Those games are unbelievable. MGS3 is phenomenal. And I never got around to starting MGS4 just because it's such a long game.
Yeah.
But you might surprise yourself if you. I know you have finite gaming time anyway, and you've got a big backlog. But that's
Victorian
backlog. The Ad Victorian backlog.
Yeah.
But you may find that actually these older games hold a great deal of power.
Well, so I'm the other way around in that I did play MGS1. I don't think I ever completed it because I was quite young at the time.
Yeah.
But I played a lot of it and I really enjoyed the VR. There's a lot of VR. Kind of side mission-y challenge things. Challenge is the word I'm looking for. And I thought they were really fun. And the stealth at the time, I don't think I'd ever really played another stealth game where you have to watch guard patrol patterns and go, okay, while he's up there, I can run there, but there's a camera there.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching how things sync up. Really enjoyed that whole aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the games after that, I didn't play.
Okay.
Because I think... Kojima's kind of weird, but I'm sure they're
that's an understatement.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure they're great. Like I don't say that. Like I bet they're not any good. It's just something that I've never really got around to. But
well, if you were going to play any of them, because it's I think canonically it might even be the first game in the series,
right?
Or chronologically and canonically,
yeah.
MGS3 set during the I think it's during the 60s or 70s. Kind of during the height of the Cold War. It's basically a Bond film as a game. It's got like a Bond theme and everything. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. It's so good. And
sweet.
If you play the HD version, you can actually play it sort of with a camera that you can move around you rather than with the forced perspective.
Oh, right.
Which I think was in the original. And then in the subsequent re-releases, they've added a camera that's actually movable. And it plays way better like that. So, yeah, I would recommend that. But there, of course, there are going to be games that people love and people hate, and so let us know in the comments below if there are any games that just got this huge critical acclaim and you gave it a go and just thought
I don't get it.
Not for me. Yeah. I can't do it. And we'll look forward to hearing those responses. Peter,
yes,
can you hear that rumbling in the distance?
I'm concerned because I'm so tiny. And I feel like something big is on the way.
Oh, Mike, it's over there in the corner of the room. Peter's reacting like he's scared. It's the biggest discussion I've ever seen.
It's big.
Tiny Peter, in the face of such overwhelming odds, in the form of the biggest discussion I've ever seen.
I don't think we've done a bigger one.
Look at it. It's all the way up there. Mm. Sort of like 3 Adam Pacittis tall.
Wow.
Which is the benchmark for big.
Yeah, I mean, even one is...
One Adam Pacitti is in awe at the size of this lad.
Yeah.
What's today's topic?
This is from Mike Bell, who I think has messaged us before, has submitted a question before.
Mike Bell.
Video game magazines, how long do they have left?
What a great headline. Whoever wrote that is surely very handsome.
So a handsome man has written that, and underneath is Mike's question. Do you guys miss the heyday of video game magazines? Obviously, channels like yours are the evolution of them when it comes to reviews and news, etc. But do you miss the thrill of grabbing that mag off the rack each month or popping through your letterbox through subscription? I used to love reading Total! Exclamation mark magazine as a kid and seeing the screenshots of new NES, SNES, and Game Boy games that were coming out and the speculation on the so-called Ultra 64. Mm. Even the times of the PlayStation demo disc have come and gone now. And if I want to see a fancy game, I can just jump on Twitch and watch a little. Well, you can watch me if you like. What was your favorite bygone magazine? And if you could bring any magazine back, which one?
I love gaming magazines. Yeah. I haven't bought or read one for years and years and years and years and years. But I used to read PSM3 almost exclusively. And I remember the first time I got it, because I very rarely got gaming magazines before, because it was sort of in that grungy period where hardcore wrestling was cool. And like they would have girls in bikinis from video games on the front of their magazines, or there'd be blood and like, oh, the most brutal game ever. And it's Kratos like holding his dick and like ripping a Gorgon's head off or something.
And the back pages are filled with pornography.
Yeah, like just so many sex lines.
Yeah, just loads and loads
of them.
I
got bullied about that once.
Did you?
Yeah, someone went through my bag and they saw that and they were like, oh, have you got a porn magazine? Which is like the weirdest thing to like think, oh, idiot, porn. Ugh, that's
gross.
Weird.
You
gross.
Like girls.
Yeah, there was a lot of that kind of stuff. But I remember it was PSM2 magazine at the time. They just did their first episode, talking about the future of this stuff. They did their first issue of PSM3 magazine. It had Army of Two on the front, and I bought it, and I bought every subsequent edition of PSM3 magazine until they went out of business.
No.
Before the PS4 came out. I had letters like featured in there stuff like that. My friends did as well. I ended up making sort of a friend for life in my food technology class when we both discovered that we read PSM3 magazine, and I'm still friends with him now. That's Ben, by the way.
Are you doing a tautology calling it PSM3 magazine?
It's not PS3 magazine. It's PSM3.
PlayStation Magazine 3 magazine is what it's called.
That's basically it, yeah.
Okay.
And that was from Future Publishing, who did a lot of gaming magazines and all sorts of magazines in the UK. And the vast majority of people who are working online now at IGN and GameSpot, and many people who we've bumped into across our travels, PlayStation Access as well, they've all worked in magazines before branching out. And as a result, you know, magazines are really struggling. And that's not news. That's been the case for the better part of a decade.
Yeah, so Future's still going, isn't it?
Official PlayStation magazine's still there. I think official Nintendo and Xbox are probably still there too.
They used to have such a big repertoire, I think, and now it's just slowly getting condensed down into a few sort of last few champions remaining.
Yeah.
My gamer uncle, who I also mentioned as much as your cousin on this podcast, he has always been subscribed to a gaming magazine for as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. And he's had to change from one to another as new generations have come out, but also as magazines have closed down. I think in the past 2 years, he's been on maybe three different magazines.
Really?
They just keep going out of business. Maybe not in a longer time than that. But he's now on one that is a kind of multi-format, multi-platform one.
Okay.
That I think is just called Game Magazine
Games
magazine.
TM, is it?
It might be Games.
They've been going for a long time. They're sort of the video games.
It is a bit premium, yeah.
Yeah, they've always been like that. Whereas I always better connected with magazines who are like, cool, blimey, he's ripped his face off.
Yeah.
Here's some stickers and
he's
some
the
sex
same,
numbers.
But I think he feels like
this one probably has the best chance of surviving.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, like I enjoyed that tone about them because I used to, although I've never been subscribed to a magazine, I used to sometimes pick them up from the corner shop, mainly for the demo disc more than anything else.
Yeah.
Or I would read it when I was over at my uncle's place. But that always kind of, there was a sense of like, it was just a bunch of guys and gals who kind of sit around. You kind of get the impression that they're writing it all from a living room somewhere where there's like consoles set up in the corner. And there was that kind of tone of like, oh, rip his dick off, or, you know, like, oh, who's this ugly MF-er, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
very brash.
Yeah, exactly. But I really enjoyed all that aspect to it. I tell you, the other thing that I think is great about magazines as a kind of resource now is that I am on the Spyro subreddit. Of course I am.
Of course you are. What's your username on the Spyro subreddit?
Well, it's all just a Reddit username.
Is it the big red dragon?
Yeah, it's 420. The big purple, giant purple dragon.
421.
And someone posted something on there recently where there's a website that's been like archiving loads of magazines into PDF format. And there was this really early article from Spyro 1 with screenshots from like a super early press build of the game.
Really?
That had loads of cut content in it. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Because if you search like the internet for that, you search IGN or you know, any other online source, it doesn't go far back enough for that kind of thing. But there was this photo of like the balloonist, who's like a little guy with goggles on, used to be this giant like Viking like horned helmet guy.
Wow.
Because he used to be a boatman instead of a balloonist. Because you were going to get everywhere from on the water. And then later on, they added a world that set up a mountain and you can't arrive there on boat. So they had to turn it into a balloonist. But just things like that, you know, that's what I love about magazines now, is that you can go back to old ones and see all kinds of old stuff that's not on the internet, because the internet wasn't really around there as much.
Even the stuff that's still on the internet from like 10 years ago, we find that all the time when we're putting lists together and we want trailer footage and things, especially on YouTube. And I think this is partially YouTube's fault, is that videos just seem to get compressed more and more and more the longer they're on there. So trailers even from, you know, 5 years ago are 720p, they're not 1080p. And any footage, like you want early footage, for example, of Borderlands when that was first showed off, before it was cel shaded, before they even went that direction, it's so low quality. And you know, if you get a print media, and this is a problem with physical print media obviously, is that it's not a video, and you can't see it in action, but you can see, you know, as high quality as you could possibly get at the time, screenshots of that. And speaking generally about print media and how that's going and stuff, you know, we've had Prima Games shut down last year that did all the strategy guides, and we both own we both ended up buying sort of in the last couple of years strategy guides for, you know, formative games for us. So I've got strategy guide for Pokemon Yellow and Pokemon Crystal that's all beat up to hell now. Mm. And you've got an original Spyro.
I've got a Spyro 1 and I keep shopping around for like Beyond Good and Evil and Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. And yeah.
And these things don't exist anymore. And I'm not saying magazines are keepsakes for games necessarily, but when you've got nuggets like that in there that you mentioned, it's really important. But yeah, things just change. You know, things change with the internet. Games lend themselves to being seen running. And that obviously, you know, we are very much part of that new wave of covering things. I've got a note here about an anecdote that I've got from when I did work experience at Official PlayStation Magazine a number of years ago. And it was mad because sites like IGN were already one of the biggest websites on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, this was only like 2014, maybe.
Right.
And there was just one guy in his spare time outside of his regular duties running a blog for Official PlayStation Magazine. Mm-hmm. And I think they just ended up canceling that and just committing full time to the magazine in the end. But like that's the only resource that they had available to them to have an online presence, apart from maybe a podcast as well. Like it's mad. I think these guys and girls are doing the absolute best that they can. Mm. And as long as they've got the official tag on them, people are probably always going to buy them to an extent.
Yeah.
But it's difficult because you've got a review for a game that comes out, you know, the game comes out 2 days after your print date and you don't get a copy of the game until after your print date. You've got to wait an entire month to give your verdict on it. People aren't waiting for that anymore. People aren't relying on that anymore. Mm. And it's difficult because I don't want to see them disappear completely.
No. And the turnaround, I mean, even if it does arrive, you know, a couple of days before your print date, the turnaround on digital stuff, it can be hours sometimes. Like if we get a code through, like a press code for a game, we could, if we wanted to, jump downstairs immediately, provided we're past the embargo date, and stream it just immediately, you know? Yeah. Whereas if you're in a magazine and your code comes through, you go, okay, well, I'll go play it. The magazine goes out in 3 days' time. Mm-hmm. I'll just wait. I'll write something up for that. By the time that goes out, everyone's already talking about it on Twitter, not just the professionals, but like amateur gamers are just like posting their own clips online and saying, hey, look at this, you know?
Yeah.
I'm in the beta or whatever.
I got my copy early. Look.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Here I go. Yeah, it's... I don't know how much time they really have left because, again, this isn't news necessarily, but it's a nice point of reflection, I suppose, on how things used to be and how things still currently are to an extent. I haven't bought a magazine for a long time, and I don't know that I ever will unless I actively contribute to it and just want to hold on to it. But, you know, these things are going to disappear at some point. They're just going to go. I don't know if Official PlayStation Magazine will then completely, you know, turn into an online presence, but there's so much competition that they wouldn't stand a chance.
No, probably not.
They even with the official tag, they would really struggle. That's where things like PlayStation Access have sort of stepped in, because they are an official PlayStation entity, but they provide coverage, they provide news, they provide exclusive content and stuff like that. That's sort of the natural evolution, I feel, of where magazines, at least official magazines, will probably go.
Yeah.
Is there to just have a YouTube presence and sort of take it from there, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a shame, but that's just the way of the world now. Same with just press and like printed media in general. Like, you know, it's never going to totally disappear, but newspapers and stuff, some of them are closing down now and going all online.
Partly due to my own negligence, but I certainly saw a decline in people in my village subscribing to newspapers as I was their paperboy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, mostly due to the fact that I didn't want to get out of bed or do it. So their newspapers took ages to arrive.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the few years I did it, I went from about 40 newspapers to 20. So
my parents used to get a daily paper. Now they just get the big Saturday bumper one.
Yeah,
so
the one that you could
six
kill
issues.
A man with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's 6 issues or 5 issues. I don't know if there's a Sunday one, but that's like 5 issues a week that they're not selling anymore.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. But let us know what you think in the comments below. Did you used to read any magazines that got cancelled or closed down? Do you miss them? Do you still follow the original writers? Because I'm still familiar with the work of many people who I used to read regularly. Mm-hmm. And I've followed their careers as they've gone on to different things. And let us know. What do you think? Do you reckon they're going to be around forever, or do you think it's a matter of time now for those that remain? Let us know in the comments below. Peter.
Yes.
Where can people find us?
We are Team Triple Jump, almost everywhere on the internet that's worth being at. We are youtube.com/Team Triple Jump, twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump, twitter.com, facebook.com, and patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. On Patreon, you can give us your money and you get rewards for it.
Yes, there's you do.
All kinds of tiers. You can submit questions for the podcast.
At any tier.
At any tier. We've got a Discord, which is bit.ly/Team Triple Jump. And on Patreon, if you give us a, I think that might be any tier as well, or it might be $5. You get to go into an exclusive Patreon room.
Yes.
The other way you can support us is by going to our website, which is tripleju.mp. And then if you go /shop, you can support us by buying some lovely merchandise. If you're watching on the video version, you can see him right now, two of the many things available to you.
Peter's wearing a swimsuit.
I am wearing the swimsuit.
I'm wearing the flip-flops.
He's wearing a mug.
Oh,
that's
yes.
That's all he's got on.
A muge.
We
wish you a Merry Christmas.
Wish you a Merry Christmas. The podcast you can access at play.acast.com/s/triple jump.
Mm-hmm.
Good URL there, isn't it? Thank
it's
you,
really
Acast.
Good. But we're also on loads of other places as well, Spotify and iTunes and stuff. All the links below if you want to find those specifically.
Yes.
This Discord chat thing, I'd like to apologize to everyone just because we keep having to push it for various reasons.
Yeah.
I've been under the weather. Peter's been away.
I'm going to be away.
Yeah. So we are going to let you know as soon as we can do that. And we will still do two this month to make up for last month as well. So keep an eye out for that. And we'll let you know as soon as we have details. It's just real life has been getting in the way recently. And hopefully that's not affecting our output too much. But if you see a slight dip in either streams or videos that will go out, then just know that there's just some stuff going on that we're sorting out, but things will return to normal very soon.
And as much as anything else, there's always a bit of a delay knock-on effect to these. So even like you can be back in the office, but it's like, oh, when we weren't in the office last week, we didn't film X, Y, and Z. So therefore, this week, even though we're back,
we've got a deficit to
exactly,
make up.
Yeah.
But exciting news for people. Obviously, a lot of people will already be aware. A lot of people will already be aware that we've got a few writers on board now helping us out. We've got James and Ben and Philip who are working from home helping us write some scripts for lists and things. We've got some freelance video editors now that are going to be starting very soon to help out with our list content that goes out twice a week. So hopefully that will free up, you know, all of this will free up time for Peter and I to do some more diverse things and start introducing some more some new shows and some old shows that you may remember as well.
Yeah,
we're in the early stages of looking at that because, you know, people are getting set to begin freelance stuff for us, so we're not ready to commit to that yet, but just know that that is on the horizon. We've also got one of them, James, he's going to be starting in the office
full-time
really soon, so there's going to be a third man to help full-time with us with video editing and script writing, which is just going to be, you know, a load of, because we've been doing all of this by ourselves so far, just the two of us, and we've just about been keeping our heads above water, but this will make a huge difference and will allow us to, as we said, just diversify what we're giving to you guys on a weekly basis. So
we hope you're welcome, James, in the way we hope and expect that you will.
Yes, absolutely. He may pop up from time to time in video form, but he's going to be a very busy. We're going to make him edit so much stuff.
Yeah, he's going to be miserable. He's
going to be our whipping boy. Move up here, James. Go on. Here's 25 lists for you to edit. Oh,
I thought you were going
to
say £25,000.
Oh,
there.
What?
That's not a bad, starting wage.
I'd take that salary.
Yeah. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday. We stream Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 3 p.m. BST.
Mm-hmm.
Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, and it's on Friday for patrons of a certain tier, but Sunday for everyone else. It's early, but not gated.
Yes.
And the podcast that you're listening to right now comes out on Saturdays every single week.
Yep. And Barbie Explorer was last week's worst game ever, and there'll be another worst games episode next week.
Yes.
So look forward to that. That's Peter.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing the radio with me today.
Thank you for doing the papers for the radio as you do every week. It makes it very easy.
Pleasure. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Check us out on all of the links below and let us know your thoughts on our various topics of discussion in the comments, and also tweet us at Team Triple Jump. Or interaction, maybe, if we check it, which we do sometimes. Home time. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Yeah, see you soon. Do that.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.